This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Palestinians hail as a victory the UN resolution that calls for the World Court's opinion on Israel's occupation of their land. Japan and South Korea say the North has fired several missiles toward the sea east of the Korean Peninsula. And also coming up, Venezuela's opposition votes to dissolve the so-called interim government led by Juan Guaido. Thank you for joining us. Our top story: the UN General Assembly has adopted a resolution calling on the International Court of Justice to give its opinion on Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories. The resolution seeks an advisory opinion on the legal consequences of Israel's occupation, settlement, and annexation of Palestinian territories. It also seeks opinion on Israeli measures aimed at changing the demographic composition and status of the holy city of Jerusalem, Al-Quds. The US, Canada, Germany and Britain were among Western states that voted against the UN resolution. Russia and China voted in favor. The Palestinian ambassador to the UN has hailed the countries backing the resolution for standing up against Israel.
This vote and request comes one day after the new Israeli government was formed, pledging to accelerate colonial and racist policies against the Palestinian people. We trust that regardless of your vote today, if you believe in international law and peace, you will uphold the opinion of the International Court of Justice when delivered, and you will stand up to this Israeli government right now, because freedom, justice, and peace shall prevail.
Other Palestinian Authority figures also lauded the UN resolution. The spokesman for President Mahmoud Abbas said it's time the Israeli regime is held accountable for its crimes against Palestinians. Another top official said the UN vote reflects the victory of Palestinian diplomacy. The World Court last weighed in on the Palestinian dispute in 2004 when it ruled that an Israeli separation barrier was illegal. Israel rejected that ruling, saying the verdict was politically motivated. Meanwhile, Israeli forces conduct a fresh raid in the occupied West Bank city of Nablus, injuring dozens of Palestinians. The troops used live ammunition, rubber bullets, and tear gas against the Palestinians. Our correspondent in Ramallah, Mona Kandil, joined us earlier with more details about the raids.
Well, the Israeli forces have raided Nablus City early on Friday. According to the Israeli military, the main aim of the operation was to arrest a Palestinian who is a member, as you have mentioned, of the Lion's Den group, Ahmed al-Masri. After, few hours of clashes that took place between Palestinian fighters and Israeli forces who raided the city of Nablus, unfortunately, at the end of the day, Ahmed al-Masri, 19-year-old Palestinian, was shot and wounded, and he was arrested by the Israeli troops. 35 Palestinians were also wounded during the operation that took place in Nablus early on Friday. After the Friday prayers, Palestinians were taking part in anti-Israeli settlement protests in the village of Osirin, as you have also said. And as usual, this continues to anger the Israeli military and the Israeli settlers, because at the end of the day, the Israelis don't want for the Palestinians to continue taking part in the different forms of resistance, even it's if it was a popular resistance, clashes took place, and at least a dozen of the Palestinians were wounded during the clashes that took place in Al-Sarin.
Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has slammed as delusional the Israeli prime minister's claims against the Islamic Republic. Nasser Kanani says Benjamin Netanyahu is trying to forge an identity for himself and the illegitimate Israeli regime. Kanani says the Israeli regime has for 70 years been suffering from an identity crisis accompanied by genocide, looting, forced displacement, and many other human rights violations. He said these atrocities are the result of wrong policies by the US, UK, and some other European countries in supporting the regime. Kanani stressed that Palestine is indestructible while the Israeli regime is doomed to decline. Netanyahu was sworn in as Israeli Prime Minister on Thursday in a comeback as the head of a hard right cabinet. In his address to parliament, he accused Iran of seeking to develop a nuclear bomb, an allegation Tehran has repeatedly denied, and an allegation that Netanyahu has made for several decades now. North Korea has reportedly fired three missiles toward the sea east of the Korean Peninsula. The South Korean and the Japanese militaries say the projectiles were ballistic missiles. The development is a further escalation to the ongoing tensions in the region. North Korea has testified a record blitz of missiles over the past months. The North claims the tests are in response to the United States' growing presence in the region and its joint military drills with South Korea and Japan. Pyongyang says the exercises are provocative and rehearsals for an invasion. Our correspondent in Seoul, Jennifer Chang, explains why tensions on the Korean Peninsula continue to escalate unabated.
Just Thursday, 2 days ago, South Korea conducted a large-scale drill aimed at shooting down North Korean drones, and it has also passed a budget to increase spending on jamming and other technologies that would boost South Korea's air defense capabilities against North Korean drones. So now this arms race has no end in sight, and many experts say that with the escalations and tensions, we will see even more missile tests by North Korea in the near future than we have been seeing in recent months. Of course, this year, North Korea fired over 90 ballistic and cruise missiles, and today's test was the 37th day this year that it has fired missiles. So this is really causing a tremendous amount of tension. The South Korea-U.S. military drills and the North Korean tests and provocations in response to those drills, with neither side backing down or willing to compromise, there is a real danger that tensions will escalate accidentally out of control.
Turning elsewhere now, Venezuela's opposition groups have voted to disband their so-called interim government led by Juan Guaido and backed by the United States. Three of four major opposition groups backed removing Guaido during the Friday voting. They've said in a joint statement that the so-called interim government is no longer useful. Guaido has denounced the vote as a jump into vacuum. The vote is a blow to the U.S. as well. That's because Washington backed Guaido when he declared himself president of Venezuela almost 4 years ago. The U.S. also tried to rally international support for Guaido. He declared himself president following elections that saw incumbent Nicolas Maduro get re-elected. Guaido had blamed Maduro's government for the economic problems of Venezuela. Caracas blames them on U.S. sanctions. Staying in the region where anger is flaring up in Bolivia over the arrest of Luis Fernando Camacho, a regional governor and right-wing opposition leader, protests in the commercial hub of Santa Cruz have once again turned violent, with some people attacking buildings, torching cars, and blocking highways. Police resorted to tear gas to disperse the crowd that was demanding the release of Camacho. The opposition figure was detained Wednesday on charges of terrorism. He is also accused of being involved in Bolivia's 2019 unrest that saw then-President Evo Morales resign. Camacho is now in a maximum security prison in the capital, La Paz. He has been sentenced to 4 months of pre-trial detention. Camacho has denied any wrongdoing. Rallies have also taken place demanding him to be brought to justice. Former U.S. President Donald Trump's tax returns have been released, ending a controversial six-year battle. A Democratic-controlled House committee released thousands of pages of redacted documents which shed a new light on how the former president handled his finances. The returns span from 2015 through 2020, covering Trump's candidacy and White House tenure. The documents reveal that Trump paid very little federal income taxes and, in some instances, didn't pay taxes at all. The committee also found that the Internal Revenue Service had broken its own rules by not auditing Trump for 3 of the 4 years he was president. Trump played down the release of his returns, saying little new information had actually been unveiled regarding his tax practices. Trump faces several legal challenges as he mounts a 2024 presidential re-election bid. We were earlier joined by Emeritus Professor of California State University, Paul Sheldon Foote, with his take on Trump's tax returns. So let's take a listen to that.
What it tells you is about the stupidity of Democrats and people who believe what they disclosed. I have not read anything yet in the articles about this saying that anything he did was illegal. We have real estate clubs here in California where individuals, I could be doing it, anyone could be doing it, where we could invest in an apartment, a condo, and get deductions for it, and we could have positive cash flow. Those laws have been around longer than I can remember, where they were put in to encourage real estate development. If you want to take that away from the American people and have less development, go ahead and do it. The Democrats also made a big deal about disclosures that he had financial ties with communist China. Really? What are they? Why not disclose the ties of Hunter Biden with China and Ukraine?
Turning elsewhere now, Russia shells several Ukrainian towns across a long stretch of the eastern front line a day after it carried out another series of strikes against Ukraine's critical infrastructure. In the capital, Kiev, sirens were heard after several explosions rocked the city on Friday. To the south, Russian forces fired on several towns and villages, including Bakhmut and the nearby areas. That's where the Russian military is pushing a campaign to take the entire Donetsk region from Ukraine. On Thursday, Russia also launched what it called a massive strike on energy and military targets. Moscow says the attacks are aimed at disrupting Ukraine's ability to repair equipment and move troops. Kiev, however, accuses Russia of hitting civilian targets. Russia's president has reversed his earlier decision that required all payments for the country's gas exports to be made in national currency, the ruble. Vladimir Putin says buyer countries can only pay for their past purchases of Russian gas in a foreign currency. The new decree is an about face on Putin's order in March that called for all the European purchases of Russian gas to be settled in the ruble. The decision was made in response to European sanctions on Moscow over its war in Ukraine. In the wake of the decision, Russia's state gas company Gazprom cut off supplies to some European countries for refusing to pay in the Russian currency. This led to a record surge in gas prices in Europe, which imported 40% of its needs from Russia. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says Moscow's relations with the EU have reached their lowest point, warning that it's not business as usual with the bloc. Russia says the EU's policies only hurt the well-being of its own citizens, and Moscow has accused the West of prolonging the war in Ukraine by providing weapons to Kiev.
Oil relations between Russia and the EU has reached its lowest point. That's according to the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. The top Russian diplomat says Moscow will not do business as usual with the EU, warning that it would find countries to work with beyond Europe. Lavrov further accused the EU of declaring, quote, a hybrid war on Moscow by unquestioningly following the U.S. He said Brussels' policies have only hurt the interests and well-being of EU citizens themselves. Lavrov has also accused the U.S. of barring EU nations from conducting dialogue on energy with Moscow. This despite the fact that Russia's supplies of cheap gas to Europe has provided the continent with, quote, unprecedented prosperity for decades. Naturally, there will be no more business as usual with such counterparties. We do not intend either to knock on closed doors or initiate any joint projects. The world is not just the European Union for us, and we have lots of friends and like-minded nations elsewhere, is what the Russian foreign minister said. The war between Russia and Ukraine started back in February. Since then, the West, spearheaded by the U.S., have imposed waves of unprecedented economic sanctions on Moscow while supplying large consignments of heavy weaponry to Kiev. The Kremlin has said that the sanctions and the Western military assistance will prolong the war.
Well, last year it was $2.3 billion, and from financial year 2023, we'll put in another $2.3 billion. That is, some of that is non-military aid. Some of that is, you know, the likes of humanitarian support, such as generators. Some of that is obviously military hardware. Some of it is training. Some of it is effectively backfilling British stocks. So stocks we've given away, we need to replace to make sure our armed forces are up to date and on the forefront of being able to defend ourselves. So that's what makes up the $2.3 billion. We're committed to another $2.3 billion for 2023.
Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
Aperture.
If you agree with me that travel is most rewarding when it surprises, then Iran might just be the most rewarding destination on Earth. By having lush, dense forests in the north, warm, sunny beaches in the south by the Persian Gulf, snowy mountains in the west, and amazingly hot deserts in the east, Iran is one of the few countries that gives the joy of experiencing four different seasons at the same time to travelers. I'm Zarin Shajeri, and this is Aperture. With an area of 1.6 million square kilometers, Iran is the 18th largest country in the world and the second largest in the Middle East. Its area roughly equals the area of France, Spain, and Germany together. Iran's diverse and striking landscapes offer a wealth of breathtaking and spectacular views to discover. This week on Aperture's Iran Trotter series, Javad Gharayi will go to Bahu Kalat in the south of Iran, where the turquoise waters meet the hot sand of the desert. Here's the first part.
The living world is filled with unparalleled beauties. Beauties represented by Mother Nature across this beautiful planet. A planet that's been the only habitat for humans since they came into being millions of years ago. The beauties of nature have forever captivated humans everywhere. Many of what humans have created over millennia were inspired by their natural environment. To many humans, the word nature conjures up images of mountains and forests, but nature has thousands of other beautiful facets, and some of those facets manifest themselves in sharp contrast to each other. One of the most beautiful faces of Mother Nature is the barren areas of land, or deserts. Many nature explorers believe that deserts and steppes are the most beautiful parts of nature, and the most beautiful parts of these parts are the sand dunes and hills. But is there anywhere in the world with expanses of shifting dry sand dunes right next to a great body of salt water named the sea? Hi, I'm Javad Gharayi. I'm an Iran trotter, and I'm taking you on a journey to the most pristine areas of this beautiful land. Chile is a beautiful country with unique natural exquisiteness, a country that remarkably has vast steppes and shifting sand dunes along the coast of the Pacific Ocean, offering a natural scene of unparalleled beauty. Of course, I haven't traveled to Chile's beautiful Pacific coast. My destination is the Bahu Kalat rural district in the south of Iran's Sistan and Balochistan province. But I'm not going straight to Bahu Kalat. I begin my trip near the border between Hormozgan and Sistan and Balochistan provinces. There are few places in the world where sand dunes meet the sea, creating a spectacular landscape. Such coastal deserts can only be seen in parts of Chile, in the Great African Sahara, and in the Southwest African country of Namibia. Some may find it hard to believe, but in addition to those few places in the world, there is an area in southern Iran where expansive sand fields meet the Sea of Oman. A place near the village of Darak in Zaravan County. The border between Sistan and Balochistan and Hormozgan provinces, in the southernmost area of Balochistan on the coast of the Sea of Oman. In the past, this area of Iran was called Mukran, a name researchers say was derived from the word muk, meaning the palm tree. Given its large number of palm groves, Balochistan can be referred to as the land of palm groves in Iran, an area with a beautiful history and peerless natural splendor. Unfortunately, the general public in Iran doesn't know much about Balochistan. The sea, the sand dunes, and the Martian mountains, all in one place, provide an environment with no parallel in Iran and, I dare say, in the world. But the sand dunes, the Martian mountains, and the Sea of Oman aren't the only things that make this area of Balochistan unique. It's the multitudes of palm and other trees scattered along this area, as well as the many herds of camels, goats, and sheep grazing among these dunes and mountains that make for breathtaking beauty. Here, Mother Nature has made all her efforts to create some of the most beautiful coastal sceneries in the world, and she's done a great job. This is the result of millions of years of work for Mother Nature. So it's incumbent upon us and the authorities to keep these unmatched beauties just as they are, by not allowing any structures, however small, to be built here or in the surrounding area. Not even a few gazebos for tourists and explorers to use. We have to preserve this natural magnificence as it is. A geopark is a unified area that advances the protection and use of geological heritage in a sustainable way and promotes the economic well-being of the people who live in it. Geoparks are protected areas. Many countries dream of having one in its smallest and simplest shape and form. There are only a few geoparks around the world that are both geomorphologically rich and boast unique wildlife, history, culture, and indigenous populations. Countries with such wealth are few and far between. But this area of Balochistan is home to several morphological splendors. It's also inhabited by Baluch tribes of a rich culture. Their traditional lifestyle and time-honored customs, a pure, unspoiled natural environment, the preserved remains from the remote past, the golden sandy coastlines and the deep turquoise blue waters of the Sea of Oman. The traditional fishing apparatus on boats moored at a beautiful port. And finally, very good vegetation and animal life. As I walk on beautiful sand hills, I think to myself, how are we responsible to the generations that will come into being in this country, to the natural beauties in our country? I'm spending today relishing the stunning untapped natural beauties in Zaravan and snap several beautiful pictures. The nagging question is, do we have the right to deny the children of tomorrow the opportunity to feast their eyes on such spectacular scenery? I wish no structure, no roads, nothing would be built among these ancient mountains, sand dunes, and palm groves. No hotels, no themed amusement parks to be built for human recreation on its untouched coastline. Even a few simple gazebos in the area can accelerate the destruction of this region's ecology and natural landscape. I wish all of us humans had more appreciation for the natural world, this manifestation of God Almighty's beauty, and paid it due respect. I wish all nature-loving tourists would choose to walk into the heart of nature, and by doing so prevented any harm to it. A lot of people in the world think that if they really want to enjoy their expedition into nature, they have to spend the nights in multi-star hotels near their destinations. But that's not the right mentality. It's not in anyone's interests. Hotels that are built close to natural habitats do nothing but damage an intricate ecology that's taken millennia to be formed. There's an alternative way for explorers to both enjoy their trips into the heart of nature and for the natural world to be spared damage by humans. In other words, for humans to forge a partnership with the natural world. Local homes, kapars, and black tents, and also camping tents are the best options. All the people and officials in this area of Balochistan say they hope that in the near future, the area they live in will be registered as an important and valuable geopark by the relevant authorities living in the capital city. And by doing so, they hope the unique natural environment here and the culture and customs of the old Baluch tribes inhabiting this region will be preserved and protected. I take great pleasure walking about in this beautiful natural landscape and accompanying camel herders, but this is the end of this leg of my journey. I have to set off for my main destination, the Bahu Kalat district in the north of Balochistan. The main purpose of this trip is to visit an idyllic little village by the name of Shir Gawaz, a lush, vast green patch of land 30 kilometers to the border with Pakistan. The name Shir Gwaz was derived from the names of two wild animals, namely the lion and the boar. The locals here tell me this area is home to wild boars, but no one has ever sighted any trace of lions here or anywhere in Iran, unless in the very distant past. Perhaps what ancient Shir Gwaz inhabitants meant by the word lion was in fact the wolf or hyena. That's because those two species have lived in this region for hundreds of years. But what has brought me to this area of Balochistan wasn't the lion or the boar. I've come here to see the Asian crocodile. Parlance, this rare species of crocodile is called the Gondo. They live somewhere between River Sarbaz, Bahu Kalot, and Shir Gwaz. The river is the biggest natural stream of water in Balochistan. It is known by different names by the locals living in villages located along its 300-kilometer course, monikers such as Sarbaz, Bahu Kalot, and Shir Gwaz. My team and I have to walk a long distance to see one of those short-nosed crocodiles. But these gorgeous, thick-skinned aquatic reptiles in Iran are said to be very shy animals, making it difficult for us to find one. What that means is you can't get too close to these amphibians and admire their beauty at close range. We have been going about gunning for a crocodile for a couple of hours now, but we haven't been able to see even one just yet. As I say, they are very shy animals. The locals tell me I'd be lucky to see one, though they also say if you wait long enough, you'll definitely be able to see at least one. Guy is around 3 meters long. The people in this area call them the Gondo. Who would have thought that you could see Gondos, the short-nosed Asian crocodiles, in a river in Iran's Sistan and Balochistan province? At their biggest, these majestic reptiles are 3.5 meters long. The primary habitats of the short-nosed Asian crocodile are in Iran, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, and Myanmar. The people of Shir Gwaz tell me the best place to see the Gondos is the Shir Gwaz Dam, a barrier built across the Shir Gwaz River to impound its water. The number of crocodiles living in Iran has been estimated at between 300 and 400. The good news is the people of Sistan and Balochistan do not do anything to endanger the survival of these adorable reptiles. The bond between them is unshakable. In general, the Baluch are kind, nature-loving human beings, traits that are rooted in these noble people's culture and creed. The love of nature and of animals is part of the life and culture of the Baluch people. Animals are part of the family, among them wild animals. Probably if this were another city or country, many people would try and, man, this guy is strong. I bet if I let him go, he's definitely gonna break my bones or break my camera into pieces. As I was saying, If this mountain goat were anywhere other than here, without a doubt, some heartless poacher would have gunned it down by now. But the people here love animals dearly. The gondos that we saw earlier, they're conserving them so well. Also, this wild goat, that's very close to the hearts of the people here. You can see many peacocks, partridges, and pheasants in the households here in Shir Gwaz, and also in other villages elsewhere in Balochistan. The Shir Gwaz River flows past Bahu Kalad village, providing the hardworking community here with water for their farms, fruit groves, and animals. Perhaps there are many people in Iran who are unaware that the fruits grown in Balochistan can only be farmed in tropical climates. But that's exactly what's happening in this province. All of the Iranian banana produce comes from this region. Bahu Kalad is also among the important producers of watermelons in Iran. The cold season is when the watermelons grown here are harvested and distributed across the country. I've just stepped into a fruit grove in Bahu Kalad. In my opinion, this is a veritable piece of heaven. Here, you can see several different species of fruits right next to each other. Something you may not be able to see anywhere else in Iran. Fruits such as bananas, dates, mangoes, papaya, all kinds of citrus fruits. I've also been told that even coffee is farmed in some of the gardens here. It's just wonderful. I mean, you could go so far as calling this place Little India, located in southwestern Iran.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. This is for a better life IRIB English Radio. I am Sayyid Mahdi Tawakkol, and one of my specialties is in improving lifestyle. And what I say is based on the Quran and Islamic tradition. In this episode of the program, I will be going over the subject, the role of remembering Allah for enjoying a better life. As I talked about previously, there is an undeniable fact about our life, which is our life on this world is never separated from difficulties. It is usually attached with so many ups and downs. Another fact is that we cannot change it. What I mean is not that we cannot solve any problem. I want to say, when I said we cannot change it, I mean we cannot change the whole sense and character of this world. And we cannot make it in such a way that there is no problem at all. For instance, can we prevent all natural disasters from taking place? Can we do something so as we don't face the death of anyone we love? Can we do something to remain always happy and never be worried about anything? Of course not. So, when the case is like this, we should find a solution to cope with these problems and try to manage them and do not let them take the control of us. One of the best effective and also efficient solution is that we always should remember Allah. Allah is the creator of this world, the creator of us as well. So nothing is out of the realm of his power. Add to it that Allah says in the Quran, إِنَّ اللَّهَ بِالنَّاسِ لَرَؤُوفٌ رَحِيمٌ. Indeed, Allah is affectionate and merciful to people. And also says, وَإِذَا سَأَلَكَ عِبَادِي عَنِّي فَإِنِّي قَرِيبٌ. O the Prophet, if my worshippers ask you about me, tell them that I am near them. أُجِيبُ دَعْوَةَ الدَّارِ إِذَا دَعَانِ. And if they ask me something, I will answer their request. As a result, remembering Allah and paying attention to His might can be very relieving and can bring about tranquility and calmness. Remembering Allah assists man to maintain his composure and his self-control. Unfortunately, those whose connection with Allah is not that much firm, or their knowledge about Allah is not sufficient, when they face a problem, instead of seeking refuge to Allah Himself, they try to find some other inefficient ways. Not only inefficient, but also harmful to their spiritual, harmful to their worldly life. These troubled people, when they feel unfortunate, sometimes they start taking sedative pills, anti-anxiety medicine, and so on and so forth. And even sometimes totally worse, they start taking illegal substances like cocaine, marijuana, and the like. And also even worse, like, God forbid, drinking wine. Here, let's have a break for a short minute and I will go back and continue my discussion.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
The topic of my today's discussion is to remember Allah and its role in having a better life. As I said, some people, when they are troubled, doing some bad actions. Some other people try another disadvantageous way. They, as soon as they are faced an uphill struggle in their life, they start to break their connection with Allah. They became angry with Allah, complain, and they will become really ungrateful. They think that Allah is like their bosom friend, that if they break up with Him, Allah will become, God forbid, remorseful and try to compensate for them. I have heard in many cases, since I have a lot of experience in improving Islamic advice as an Islamic consultant, I realize that people who have faced troubles start whispering to themselves that, why me? Have I not for many years prayed and worshipped and fasted for the sake of Allah? Have I not been a good worshipper of Allah? Why didn't Allah stop that problem from happening? Or they say, why didn't Allah do anything to prevent me from getting stuck in that trouble? These words are, unfortunately, something or sometimes a gate for a more hideous action, like abandonment of prayer and fasting. It leads to throwing over many merits and ethical points and leads to committing many sins. Those people who do this should know that we suppose that you break up with Allah, then what will happen at the end? Either anyone other than God who answers human requests, either anyone who, if Allah does not will something, that man can stop God and instead implement his own decision? Of course not. Moreover, in the day of judgment, who instead of Allah can enter you in the heaven or prevent you from getting into the hellfire? But those who are connected to Allah do the decent thing, take the best decision. They, in difficulty, become more attached to Allah, more connected to Him. Their worship and religious acts become more. They prostrate in front of Allah and talk to Him. They share their difficulties with Allah. Of course, Allah is aware, but He likes to see His servants talking to Him.
We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
Prophet Jacob, or in Islamic terminology, Ya'qub, when he suffered from his son's separation, when he cried and wept from his separation for years and became blind, his children told him, "By Allah, you do not cease remembering Yusuf until you become seriously ill or until you die out of sorrow." But this prophet, instead of becoming hopeless or ingratitude, said, "I complain of my grief and distress only to Allah, وَأَعْلَمُ مِنَ اللَّهِ مَا لَا تَعْلَمُونَ, and I know from Allah something that you do not know." In this way, those who remember Allah in difficulties never lose hope, and instead get more dependent to Allah. In our today's discussion, we realize that we should never lose our connection with Allah in any problem we face. Inshallah, in the following session, I will discuss this point more. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Every grain of sand in every desert land, he knows. Every shade of palm, every closed hand, he knows. Every sparkling tear on every eyelash, he knows. Every thought I have and every word I share, he knows.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.